Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:50 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is February 3rd, and Amazon reported after the close today, and the cloud division went way ahead of expectations. So it was reasonably predictable, like I wrote yesterday, that Amazon was going to have a strong fourth quarter in the year, and that the cloud sector would significantly outperform expectations. That's exactly what's happened, and the share has bounced in after hours trading. I saw an article just before I started recording by MarketWatch predicting that the share would probably open somewhere around $3,100 tomorrow. So that would unwind the 6% decline that we saw today and bring it back into the region of the lower side of this overhead trading range. What is less well remarked upon is that Rivian was one of the major contributors to the bounce in revenue, because the share IPO'd at about $100 back in November, and Amazon took a profit out of that. Of course, the share has subsequently done nothing but decline, and there isn't much to say that this decline is over either. So we've had what might be seen as one-off boosts to profitability. But I think the more important point here is that Amazon has broken downwards, and now it's probably going to bounce. But it's got a lot of work to do. And in order to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, it's going to have to at least push back above the 200-day moving average. So we're still seeing that some of the mega cap companies were reporting really strong earnings from cloud. But the problem is that for the wider sector, it's been under a cloud for most of the last 3 months. And the first cloud computing ETF had pulled back from its peak for the week in here today. So we have a short-term oversold condition. There's no question about that. But it's got more work to do in order to clearly demonstrate that support building is underway. So we certainly have a more difficult environment. And when we think about what the outlook is likely to be, it's important to highlight that Treasury yields are rising. So we've been in this range now for nearly a month, and the yield hasn't really gone anywhere. But we've had two good-sized upward dynamics out of the last 7 days of trading, and this looks like a consolidation. And I think it's also relevant that the 10-year the Merrill Lynch Total Return Index for 10-year futures is back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and it's beginning to fail at that level. Now, we haven't seen a trade below this mean since at least 2018. So what happens here in terms of bonds is important, and we're now also starting to see a great deal of commonality coming through in the bond market. So Bund yields in Germany rose today in a dynamic manner through the 0% level. That's completing the base formation. And then 10-year gilts in the UK have been trending higher for a while and pushed on to new highs as well. And they're coming back into this 1.5% level and testing the peak from back in 2018. I did also highlight, I think it was earlier this week, that there's only been one other occasion when the 200-day moving average crossed up through the 1,000-day moving average on gilts. So this is a really significant event. And from a bond perspective, the only time this has happened before was in 2007 through 2008. So we're in a delicate situation for bond investors, because one thing that I think is interesting is that bond yields are rising everywhere. And When we think about that, it truly is a global phenomenon that bonds are really selling off and yields are rising right across the board. Now, when we think about Australia, the yield has been pausing around the 2% level for most of the last year. And the RBA is a little bit more dovish than other central banks. So then there's still the potential that they're going to continue with their quantitative easing program a little bit longer than everybody else. But ultimately, this yield has risen from 75 basis points to 2% over the course of the last 12 months. So we're still, even in a more benign environment, seeing yields popping on the upside. And of course, this is going to continue to put pressure on the most over-levered portions of the market. So the innovation sector was in negative territory again in here today. One thing that I think is weighing particularly on the bond market in the USA is the strength of the euro. The euro was up over a cent in here today. So we had the failed downside break and then a really significant upward dynamic in here today. And it's pushing back above the 114 level. Now, the last time it did that, it failed. And we've certainly gone up in a very dynamic manner over the course of the last four sessions. It really does need to hold the advance if this is going to be a clear change of trend. But certainly, we would give the benefit of the doubt to the upside and the most recent dynamic. If the euro is strengthening, then the appeal of US denominated bonds becomes less attractive. So that also represents a flight to cash, and we're starting to see that the dollar index is pulling back. This also looks like a failed upside break. Now, we still have some room. It is still above the 200-day moving average. It hasn't dipped back into the underlying range just yet, but this is the biggest downward dynamic for the dollar that we've seen since at least the middle of 2020. So it's I think, a significant event. And then we can think about gold. So government bond yields are rising everywhere, and people are worried about inflation. But I thought one thing that's interesting is that a lot of the inflation in Europe and inflationary measures in Europe really surprised on the upside in here today. But when we think about what we're seeing in terms of that European inflation data, well, a lot of it is to do with energy. And this salmon-colored bar represents about 3% of the 5% reading for inflation in Europe right now. Well, raising interest rates isn't going to help that. But it also means that you've got inflation and you've got central banks that are inhibited from doing what's necessary to bring it in, because what's really necessary to try and control inflation in Europe is political in nature. And that's going to be tantamount to herding cats. So they're just praying that there isn't going to be a cold snap between now and March. And obviously, this is not something that central banks have any control over. So gold prices were down about $14 at one point today, and then popped back above the $1,800 area by the close. And this is looking increasingly like an additional higher reaction low. So we've had a significant compression in terms of the amplitude of the range. If we can think about back between June and August, the price came from $1,900 to $1,700. Then from the peak in November, it went from $1,875 to $1,750. So that was a meaningful contraction in the volatility and amplitude of the range. If the low from last Friday holds, Well, then the amplitude will have contracted from 1850 to 1775. And this narrowing of breath isn't something that lasts indefinitely. Ultimately, we're going to have a breakout. Well, I think I've been reasonably clear, and I believe that the breakout's going to be on the upside. I believe that it's not all that unusual that we have lengthy ranges in gold. And gold has a history of going sideways for anything up to 18 months at a time. And we're not all that far away from the 18-month horizon. But the more important point is that central banks are being inhibited from doing what they need to try and control inflation and support the purchasing power of their currencies. And with that being the case, well, there's certainly scope for gold to move to outperformance. And we've had some meaningful moves, particularly in the pound and the euro, because of the strength of the respective currencies. But what I thought was interesting is that gold is back now in the region of the 200-day moving average when redenominated in pounds. And even in euro, where it pulled back rather sharply in here today, it was off the low and finding support in the region of the upper side of the base formation. So gold is beginning to turn back to a position of outperformance relative to a large number of currencies and finding support at successively higher levels. So this is evidence of accumulation. And we can then also think about the total known holdings of gold. And that level, or that measure, is starting to increase. So it was up 56,000 troy ounces yesterday. But more importantly than that, it's broken the succession of lower rally highs. So I think that's quite clear on this weekly chart. And if that's the case, well, then that's additional evidence of accumulation that's underway. So with the euro starting to strengthen and the dollar pulling back and government bond yields rising and central banks extremely reluctant to act aggressively to raise rates, and the technology sector extremely exposed to interest rates, then the number of asset classes that can do well in this environment is comparatively small, and gold certainly falls into that category. And even so, gold shares are still languishing towards the lower side of their range and hovering here around the $30, dollar level. And the gold shares are extremely well levered to gold prices because they're not spending money and they're in on aggregate raising dividends. And they have cash piles that they're sharing with investors. And they're not aggressively going out and buying specky companies or unproven resources. And they're not spending a lot of money on additional new mines. And in many cases, it's not for the want of trying. It's simply that the regulatory burden before one can break ground today is a lot higher than it used to be. So that means that they're doing rather well, and yet they're being completely ignored by investors. And of course, that's because gold prices have been ranging, not trending. Well, one of the reasons why the oil sector has been doing better is because oil is trending. And oil prices were up over a dollar in here today and closing in again on the $90 area, up to nearly 91 now. So breaking away from the peaks put in back in 2018, completing what is effectively a 7-year range. And this continues to look like a price series that has further to go on the upside. And with oil prices rising, carbon credits are also pushing on to new high ground. This is a symptom of the political nature of the energy crisis in Europe. So carbon credits are rising because there's less supply and higher energy prices. And if they wanted to bring down the price of carbon and try and mitigate some of the pressures on the economy, well, they could simply issue more of these carbon credits, but there's just no appetite for that. This is all part of a bureaucratic wish to get prices up to €100. And of course, this is also contributing to inflationary pressures in Europe. It's going to create demand destruction. And energy poverty is a really significant challenge in places like the UK and much of Europe because of the phenomenal gains that have been put in for natural gas. And natural gas prices continue to hold the vast majority of the breakout. So we've had extraordinary volatility, both up and down, but by and large, the breakout has been sustained at a level double the peaks from before the pandemic. And that's going to start turning up in the household bills of consumers. So if people have to curtail spending in order to pay their electricity bill, well, then that's going to represent the taking away of spending power in some other sector. So you're going to get demand destruction. You're definitely going to get slower economic growth. And as long as these energy prices remain higher on a year-over-year basis, you're going to have higher inflation. Well, that's a recipe for stagflation. And it certainly suggests that commodities can do well in that environment, but again, it writes large that we're in a situation where central banks are unable, are not in a position to do what's necessary to control inflationary pressures, which is also generally positive for gold. Of course, we've also had really significant pullbacks in renewable energy, and the solar sector, for example, has broken lower over the course of the last month, and it's now testing the region of the 1,000-day moving average and also the region of the peaks from all the way back in 2014 and 15. And some of the high-flying portions of the market, like NextEra Energy, well, it had an impressive rebound last week, and now it's giving up some of that advance in here this week. But it also has revenue-producing assets, and I think that's where we're going to get a differentiation within the sector. There will be some portions of the market will recover faster than others, and certainly when they have when they're well capitalized. So the Brookfield Energy, a renewable energy partners, has also pulled back in an aggressive manner, coming from 50 down to 30, and also testing the region of the 1,000-day moving average. It's often puzzled me why we didn't get more interest in the geothermal energy, and Ormat Technologies is the number one pure play on this sector. And the share shot higher in 2020, collapsed in 2021, and has been ranging pretty much since. But it has an increasing portfolio of geothermal electricity stations all over the world. So it's the kind of company that will start to attract interest from the ESG portfolios, and particularly as those portfolios get reoriented instead of greenwashing more towards actual investments in new energy. But of course, we've had a great deal of interest in the industrial resources portion of the market, and industrial metals are still in the region of their all-time peaks and looking quite steady. And of course, the big question for this sector is going to be what happens in terms of China's demand when the Olympics are over and when there is the priority of having clean air over Beijing becomes less of a national priority. And then metal bashing in China will probably start to amp back up again. So that should be beneficial for steel production, and it should be positive for liquidity provision overall. So it does continue to look like that the resources sector is going to come out of the pandemic stronger. But obviously, we still have a lot of questions around the sustainability of the innovation sector. And the bigger questions are about the forward guidance for a significant portion of the mega cap sector, because they did spectacularly well during 2021, and they did extremely well in 2020 as well. But money supply growth is starting to moderate. There'll be a fiscal drag this year, and central banks are withdrawing liquidity and beginning to raise interest rates. So then growth rates are not going to be as strong in 2022 as they were in 2021. So we're more than likely in a medium-term correction for stock markets, and then the sensitivity of a large number of those bigger companies is rather high. So that's also going to be a drag as long as yields are rising. And obviously, I think that inflation is going to start to ease back as we push through this year. And there are a couple of reasons for that, but one, of course, is that oil prices are pushing higher, and that's going to create demand destruction. And then, secondly, inflation itself is largely calculated on a year-over-year basis, and things are not going to increase at the same rate this year as they did last year. So that will also contribute to lower inflation. But just like we've seen with many of the commodity prices, the inflation that it eases back to is still likely to be higher than it was before the pandemic. So we're in a new inflationary environment, and that's likely to be a topic of conversation for the foreseeable future. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.